Welcome to the Business and Leadership Channel. My name is Michelle Boulay, and I'm so honored to be a sponsor here at this amazing conference because it's my passion to help you connect to your own inner leader and let that transform the businesses and relationships you create. I'm a life coach and healer and an internationally recognized award-winning dance artist. And dancing taught me to listen to my own inner voice and let that guide me to my success. A very common thing that happens for business owners, creatives, and leaders is that you're so close to your next goal or breakthrough and then you stop. Doubt kicks in, worry, procrastination, fear, overwhelm, which kill growth in your business and creative process. So I'm giving a talk here on Saturday, October 24th, where you'll learn tools so that you can show up with clarity and belief in yourself and your ideas, consistency to keep showing up, and the embodied and intellectual understanding to move you gracefully through the challenges you'll meet as you grow, as you go for your goals. If you can't make it live, pick up your phone now, go to Instagram or Facebook, find me, follow me, and DM me the word success, and I'll send you the free resource I'll be sharing at my presentation. It's also in the show notes. However, I do recommend you attend live here or at my main stage presentation to get the full scope of what I'll be sharing to help you realize your creative dreams. And now, please enjoy this next presentation.
So again, welcome everyone to this panel. So I would like to present each of the panelists today. Let's start with Ginny. So Ginny is a Zen Master, leadership expert and founder of the Institute of Zen Leadership in the United States. But she's also she also has co-developed the Phoebe, which measures four patterns of personality that connect body, mind, and behaviors, and trains practitioners worldwide in applying Phoebe in their work. Then we have Dylan Newcomb. Hi. So Dylan is the founder and lead trainer of Uzazu Embodied Intelligence, master embodiment-based coach for helping professionals and cultural creatives, embodiment researcher. So Dylan went to co-found after a long research, on mind-body. He created a lab in 2001 where he conducted a cross-cultural research for several years. And since then, he's using his own methods, which is called Uzazu Embodied Intelligence. Hi, Dylan. Then we have Lynn. Lynn is a Kundalini yoga and Enneagram instructor, author, and facilitator. So she's combining the physical benefits of Kundalini yoga with the psychological growth tools of the Enneagram. She has wrote two books which combine the Kundalini yoga and the Enneagram. So welcome, Lynn. And then we have, last but not least, Stefan Segatori. So Stefan is director of We Space Lab in Amsterdam, right? His background is in business intelligence and in MBTI coaching, which is the 8 Jungian cognitive functions. He's a sportman with 25 years background of handball, and we will see what we have to talk about MBTI and We Space Lab as well. So welcome everyone to this panel. My first question would be, first of all, if you can explain a little bit more about your tool. So for people who are watching or listening, to let you know, so as you've maybe have listened, Ginny and Dylan have created their own tool from different research, while Stefan and Lynn mixed well-known tools, which is the Enneagram and MBTI, and mix it together to help their own clients. So I would start with Ginny, if you can explain a little bit more about Phoebe.
Sure, thank you, Stephanie. And thank you for creating this context for all of us to share this work we love. that Phoebe came about when I was a leader at NASA and started taking leadership development courses and learning that personality could be measured. But by that time, I was already an Aikidoist and Zen person. Where, in other words, I had deep training from the dojo in my body. And I would learn these personality tests and I go, where's the body in this? Why is it stopping at the neck? And it was really bugging me. So I started writing about body learning and how we learn through the body way back in the 90s. And it led to Betsy Wetzig, Elizabeth Wetzig, who was a dance choreographer and movement therapist. And she had learned of these patterns in the nervous system that relate to the order in which nerves fire muscles, way back in the work of Josephine Rathbone in the 1930s. But they were kind of set on the shelf for decades and thought about as patterns of movement. But Betsy recognized they were patterns of personality. And when I learned about them, I thought, this is incredible. This will help people because it shows us how to work with our own nervous system. And when you make something physical, as I think any of us panelists would agree, you make it trainable, you make it practicable. And what the Phoebe has done in our research, we've been able to correlate it with the big five, you know, the four dominant factors of personality, and correlate it with physical movement. So you can actually experience these physical states and see what each is good for in leadership and everyday life, and where you might need more of one or the other. So Phoebe will measure our natural preferences for those. But it goes on further to say, how can you develop any energy you need more of for whatever you face?
Thank you very much. I have Stefan next to you. So Stefan, if you want to explain a little bit more how you use MBTI.
Yes, thank you. Welcome, everyone. So I'm presenting the WeSpace Lab in Amsterdam, and we have a practice called the WeFlow. And what's beautiful about WeFlow is that it's collectively emerged. So we're basically a group of practitioners of very different domains that came together and wanted to experience a collective state, the same state that we can get after, for example, a Zen retreat or after a lot of meditation or simply human connection, like large scale human connection with practices like circling, for example, or authentic relating. And we took this and we started to implement in our daily life. And the difference is that we validated all of our insight collectively. There's a form of peer-to-peer validation, and we only kept the best. And what we help all of the members of our collective, we have 65 active members, and in total we touched about 350 professionals. What we help them with is how to specifically apply the practices that they learn in their own context for their own personality type, but also for their type of job, the lifestyle that they have. And we notice very quickly that we can get into flow, into a collective flow, an individual flow. That's why our practice was named WeFlow, basically. And we have a lot of, over the course of 3 years, we've emerged a lot of mini practices to meet any interferences that can happen in someone's life. Anytime someone is in a bad state or out of flow or a big, let's say, challenge to meet, we've collectively emerged and tested a lot of types of answers. And we're using the Myers-Briggs as a way to adapt the right practice to the right person. It's not the only tool we use. It's amongst panel of tool, but it's been very useful for us to notice patterns in our collective, depending on personality styles. Thank you.
Thank you, Stefan. Lynn, would you like to explain a bit more how you use the Enneagram?
Sure. So what I do is I combine Kundalini yoga and the Enneagram. And the way I describe it is, if you imagine that you're lost in the woods, and you're trying to find your way out, the Enneagram gives you a very detailed map. It tells you exactly where to go, but it doesn't give you the supplies to make the journey. Kundalini yoga gives you all the supplies. You're gonna have energy, you're gonna feel great, but it doesn't give you a map telling you where to go. When you combine the two systems, suddenly you've got the map, you've got the supplies so you can make the journey. And the journey is to self-awareness. So I've put the two systems together, and my journey with it is I found the Enneagram in the mid-90s. I was studying it. I knew my type. I was trying to relax my habit of attention. So if anyone's new to the Enneagram, it's a system of human personality that says your experience in life is dictated largely by where your attention goes. It's called a habit of attention. There are 9 different habits of attention. And when you learn yours, your behavior makes more sense. And when you learn someone else's, their behavior makes more sense. So in the Enneagram, the goal is to relax that habit. So I knew my habit. I knew where I was kind of overemphasizing. I was trying to relax it. But frankly, it was going very, very slowly. Then in 2007, through a whole different set of life circumstances, I came to Kundalini yoga. And what I realized was after about 6 months of a regular Kundalini yoga practice, all of those changes I was trying to make suddenly started happening a lot more organically. And Ginny talked a little bit about the nervous system. I just want to touch on what that is. The nervous system is actually the combination of your brain, your nerve endings, and your spinal cord. So it's really important to have a strong nervous system. And that is very different than being athletic. I was quite athletic, but I actually had a weak nervous system. So I think a lot of probably what all of us are going to be talking about are different ways to strengthen the nervous system, but that's what it is. I have woven the two systems together. Kundalini yoga is great because it's very specific. So it has meditations for anger. It has meditations for anxiety. It has meditations for shame. And Kundalini yoga, or the Enneagram, tells me which of those issues the different personality types are working on. So it was quite, not easy, but it was quite possible to weave the two systems very specifically together. So that's what I've done.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Lynn. Dylan, can you explain a little bit more where you're coming from and how did you create Uzazu?
Sure. So I started as a dancer and a musician, and I was really interested in the effect of sound on movement and movement on sound and that interplay. So I lived in Holland for 20 years as a dancer, so I was there. And I got a grant from the Dutch government to study the impact of vowel sounds on thought, emotion, and behavior. That's where I started. So I researched, having people from many different cultures, over 200 people over the course of 3 years, make 40 different kinds of vowel sounds, and then cataloged how they felt when they toned different vowel sounds and how their body naturally wanted to move. I didn't know what I was doing. I just was obsessed with it for some strange reason. And what we found was that, by toning different vowel sounds and sort of codifying the way the body naturally wanted to move with it, say, ooh, or ah, or ooh, or ee, that it would very quickly bring, via the nervous system or the social nervous system as well together, the body-mind awareness into a certain state. And some states were easy for people, comfortable for people to wear. You know, some person you say, go, ah, and let your body expand, and they gleefully do that. Ah, oh, this is fun. Other people, that feels really uncomfortable, right? And so that's the beginning of a really juicy inquiry, isn't it? To like, okay, why is the body not feeling safe doing that? Or why is the body feeling kind of vacant and dissociated when it's asked to turn in on itself and sense, right? So you get this, before we knew it, we had this platform for quickly accessing, activating different states, and then starting to work with how the body mind was responding to that invitation. Was it starting to shut down? Was it getting overexcited? It took another 10 years, that was about 6 years, 7 years of work. In the last 10, 12 years, I've been working at how does this correlate to how people are showing up in their life? So it's been many, many iterations of the assessment, but fast forward 18 years, and we have a 72 questions about your life and how you're showing up, through which we can infer, therefore, a reasonable guess of what kind of states are more and less comfortable for you to embody. So then you have a map by taking that, and then you can quickly, you know, via practitioner, do the correlating movement and sound. So you get both the subjective as well as the objective view on yourself. And then as Lynn was saying, you know, then the the synergy of the journey and the map can start to begin.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Dylan. So my first question, and I think that was for me a real interest to start this panel, is for people to understand, as a lot of companies and leadership use personal assessment, but it's more like a brainy personal assessment where you just answer questions. Why do you think it's important to bring embodiment into those personal assessment? So I don't know who wants to answer that. I think Ginny, if you would like to start.
Yeah. Well, that's been the world I've lived in for more than 25 years of taking leadership programs into companies. And the key reason to bring the body into it is that's where change happens. Change, you know, the mind cannot just change on its own because the embedded habits are in the body. It's deeper in the nervous system, as Lynn was pointing out. And those habits require some kind of physical intervention. But leaders in corporate or in companies and corporate worlds are used to taking a personality test. But when that stops at the neck, again, it can be hard to go from self-awareness to the next stage of emotional intelligence, which is self-regulation, which is where you actually start to make shift happen. And since leaders often come to leadership programs wanting to make some kind of shift happen, maybe they've gotten a lot of feedback or something that's telling them they need to be more effective this way or that way, making the link into what you need to do and what patterns support you in doing that becomes really important. And that's where you need to go into the body.
Thank you. Anyone would like to add anything around that? Dylan, yes, please. Oh.
Yeah, well, I completely agreeing with what Ginny just shared and building on that, you know, you can kind of work two ways with this, right? You can take an assessment and then embody it. So you start with the written questions and then you go, okay, let's look at this from a body perspective. You can start right from bodily exercises and let that speak. In either scenario, there is almost always, in my experience, a gap between someone's picture of themselves, their mental image of what they're good at, what they're comfortable with, and when you actually have a clear way to bring that into the body, that's where the shadow material, the boundary of what they're just not aware of really starts to come into view. And that opens up this precious window for them for really significantly deepening their self-awareness. Of course, it has to be done carefully and gently and skillfully because stuff can be there, right?
Thank you. Lynn.
So I'll just add, before I was a Enneagram instructor, before I was a Kundalini yoga teacher, I was an accountant. So when you ask the question from a leadership perspective or a corporate perspective, why would you do that? It's actually just good economics. So you actually want to be effective in the training and the coaching that you're offering to your leadership. It is extremely expensive to have to replace a CEO, to coach a CEO, to counsel a CEO, to deal with lawsuits, to have stress leave, any of those things. Those are actually extremely expensive. And I'll use anger as kind of the easiest example. If you've got someone in management, in leadership, who has an anger management problem, telling them to deal with it, just like saying the words, is not actually going to help them. It is a somatic response. Like that idea of take a deep breath is really, really real. And I use that kind of as a simple, you know, it's easy to wrap your mind around. But any behavior that you're trying to coach, it's like that. There is a somatic piece that you're going to be a lot more effective if you deal with it, both from the psychological, but also from the somatic angle. So it's just good economics is the other thing I would add. I agree with everything Dylan and Ginny said, but just to even look at it from that angle.
Thank you very much. Stefan.
Yes, I like what Lynn said. From my perspective and perspective of WeFlow, we meet this kind of problems functionally. Like the test is something, mental. It's how we relate with oneself. But if I do a Myers-Briggs test, for example, and I manage to validate my type, then it's one of our one out of 16 types, and there are 16, at least 16 ways of experiencing the world, 16 patterns of experiencing the world. And for example, if someone joins us and they validate with INFP, so very in tune with their own feelings, right? Because our space is a collective space, conscious space, the way they will connect with others will be by feeling others inside themselves. And as we unpack this collectively, we notice some people are feeling others inside others, and some people are feeling others inside themselves. So what does it mean? You know, if we take someone at the opposite of the spectrum, someone who's, for example, ENFJ, completely attuned to others, to the space, to the field, they will have a cone of development, some somatic practices to do that will be different. And what often happens is that someone who's very in tune with their feelings in our collective space, they have sometimes for the very first time the experience of a window opening inside their soma, inside their body, starting to experience others. And for some people, it's the very first time. And at the opposite side, people who are very attuned, spending 1 hour feeling only their own feelings, it will trigger such a development, such an expansion of their view that it would be very beneficial for them. So that's why for us it's important to have the link between the type we validate from point of identity and the soma practice that we can do when we have this type, for example.
Thank you. Now I would like to, if it's okay with you, you cannot play the game if you don't want to, but I would like you to explain why knowing all those personality assessment and test, why you have chosen the tool you're using right now. So if you want to start, I don't know, should we do the same order maybe, Ginny? If you can explain a little bit, well, yeah.
If someone else wants to go first, I'm fine with that. But I'll go ahead for this round. But I choose this one because it's simple and clear, and it can be felt. It's a felt experience in the body. You can actually move people into the four patterns: the driver, the organizer, the collaborator, the visionary. These are felt experiences, and it correlates with the big five. So it has this easy correlation with the four dominant factors of human personality. But truthfully, all personality tests are just coordinate systems. They're just a way to try to describe a human being. So there's going to be a lot of overlap and some that are better for this or better for that. But in my work, helping leaders see their blind spots and what they need to move, how they need to move into a certain realm to be more effective, having four to work with is a really useful number because they can see their equivalent of handedness, you know, what's their go-to pattern or style, and they can see the benefit, you know, what's missing in that. So simple, clear.
Thank you. Dylan,
would you like to? So the tool that I've developed is called the Embodied Intelligence Assessment. And it's measuring how frequently you're in which state. Yeah, either in its underactivated, balanced, or overactivated form. And we settled over the years on that framework. So the assessment sort of took the form it did because it seemed the most directly actionable, accessible in the body, and actionable in terms of how the person and their nervous system were showing up moment to moment. So very similar, I think, to what Jeannie's saying, you know, having an embodiment-based and embodiment-developed assessment and practice tool as one functional unit just means that translation from assessing to repatterning to using it in your life is just as fluid and as efficient as possible. And that's kind of always what I'm striving for as we keep developing this.
Thank you. Eileen, I'm just maybe because for what you explained before, you had the Enneagram, but maybe my question would be, again, why the Enneagram and not another tool that for you think it's really important? Yeah.
That's a great question. I would want to be really clear. I have a lot of respect for many of the personality systems out there and many of the styles of yoga out there. So it's not that I think mine are best. It's the two that I happen to use, but I do use them for specific reasons. The Enneagram speaks to motivation, and I like that a lot because it helps to be predictive of behavior. So a lot of the systems out there are actually talking about behavior, how you behave, but they're not asking the question, or they're not directly addressing the question, why are you behaving that way? The Enneagram is actually much more interested in the motivation and much less interested in the behavior. So I find it predictive of behavior, and I find that useful. Kundalini yoga, instead of other forms of yoga, is very focused on the breath. And I actually think the key to a lot of the way to strengthen the nervous system and a lot of the way to kind of change the neuroplasticity of our brain is in the breath. So that's the reason that I use those two systems. However, I think there's a lot of benefit in a lot of the systems out there. So,
great, thank you. Stefan?
We chose Myers-Briggs for several reasons. I think the first one is it's a very neutral system. It also has 40 years of statistical, let's say, evidence. And the fact that it's neutral, it's important for us because we don't like when types are used to attach negative, let's say, negative traits to someone or negative judgments. For us, it's really a cone of development, and it helps us know what can happen for the development of one person if we know that, for example, someone that's a model for us has the same personality style. It will tell us what capacity for development we have. Neutrality and also seeing our own development. And I think one of the secondary, but it's becoming the most important reason is the fact that it's highly compatible with meditation and group practices. Why Myers-Briggs is compatible? Because if you break it down to the building blocks, it's the eight cognitive functions of Jung that are centered on perception and also decision-making. Not forcibly life decision-making, but the decisions we make in real time and how we perceive things. So it's kind of codifying the perception of self and others. And that's why for us, it's very functional. And the last piece is about precision. For some reason, the fact that there's four functions, eight families, 16 types, we managed to help people to identify themselves with the type with a high degree of accuracy. And some of us use the Enneagram also for motivation purposes. But because our work is mostly around the perception of self and connection with others, we decided to focus on the Myers-Briggs. Those are the reasons. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I think I would go for the time, see if, first of all, if people have some question. If the participant have some question, please put it on the Q&A so we can start answering your question as soon as possible. My next question is actually related to all the embodiment practitioners that may want to bring their skills and what they do in companies. Do you think that your tools or the tools you're using would be useful to go and approach companies instead of only individuals? I'm talking about embodiment practitioners that may be yoga teachers or, coaches, etc. So maybe I would change. Let's start with Lynn, maybe.
So my goal is to get this combination of Kundalini yoga and the Enneagram to 1 billion people. So there's 7 billion people in the world. I would love it if 1 billion of them started doing this. So to your point, do I think that there's a benefit in businesses? Absolutely. I think there's a business benefit everywhere. Again, looking at how to approach it in a business environment, I think if we look at people are stressed out, people are not working as effectively as they could, there's a very good business case for bringing it to people. And what I really start people with is a simple 3-minute meditation. So I don't say you've got to sign up for a whole, you know, huge program of doing, you know, 90 minutes of this combination every day. I say, let's figure out your Enneagram type. Why don't you start with this 3-minute meditation? Why don't you do it for 40 days and then let's move from there? So I think there are a lot of pretty accessible ways to get it out to the business community. And I think that is absolutely what needs to happen next.
Thank you. Dylan.
Yes, I do believe that the tool we have is very amenable to organizations and businesses. We have not yet, in the current iteration of it, I haven't been working in that field for about 8 years. I used to, with my old assessment, do that. Long story why, doesn't matter. We're bound to start doing it again. Right now, with the certified practitioners, the Uzazu certified practitioners, they have the assessment online. And so they invite a client to take it. The client takes it and they can review online together the assessment. What I have found is that it works very, very well in client acquisition. And that can be translated obviously to business as well. I wouldn't in most cases, for example, just give somebody the assessment and then jump in and talk with them about it. They might have already taken the assessment, they might not have. I would pretty much always start with at least 30, 45 minutes of conversation, connection, getting to know them, really get a feel for how they move, how they feel, what their desires are, how they're articulating their challenges and their desires. And then it's a very potent moment to look at that assessment, no matter which assessment you're working with, right? And look at that and say, oh, how does this relate? What are the opportunities here? What are the blind spots that this might be pointing out? And then if that's done skillfully and compassionately, that process can bring the conversation to a level of focus, insight, and purposefulness, whereby to agree on a plan and a path together and feel committed around that, I find happens so much more easily, rather than just having a conversation saying, yeah, I think I could help you. When they can see it there and go, oh, so that would change and then that would mean this in my life. Oh yeah, I'm on board for that.
Thank you. Stephen?
Yes, how to bring this into businesses and how to apply it. So it's interesting because in my career, I've been on the receiving end of a lot of tests and models. And yes, it stays a conversation about ways we communicate. So what we did in our collective, we let aside, let's say, the descriptive part, and we go into the application. Like, what does it mean for me to be, for example, to identify with ENTP? And what can I use in my SOMA, in my experience, when I'm in a context with some consultants or coaches in the company? And there's a link, actually, for example, between the way we experience feeling, depending on our type, and the way we're going to make agreements around culture or around processes. And so we, in our training, we go directly to the integration and the implementation of it. And we help and train people to do, to present agreements or to present new ways of working, new ways of being. And each type will have a certain way, a proficiency, a certain way of bringing it. But what we notice also is that we have to develop some other areas in our dominant way of perceiving the world, so we are able to connect with all the people that are in the room. Like basically using the body as an instrument, as an organ, and connecting this with what happened in the company, which is some states of concentration, some processes, and some culture that's either hidden or default culture or changing culture. So. And I mean, I wish I could say more about this, but that's a good terrain of exploration, I would say.
Thank you. Ginny?
Well, the Phoebe and working with the four energy patterns was in a sense designed for business. It was the world I had come out of. It was the world I started working in more and helping leaders understand their go-to patterns, as well as the patterns that represent their blind spots or their weak side, and then how to cultivate those. It transfers very directly into the business world. it also translates into teams in a bit, as Stefan was just describing, when groups can start to understand their patterns, whether they're too urgent in driver, too rigid in organizer, a little bit, you know, all people oriented, but not as directed in collaborator, or they have a million ideas, but nothing's getting done in visionary. As teams start to understand these qualities, they can also cultivate any pattern they need for their greater effectiveness. So for both individual and teams in businesses, it's very helpful to have a good read of the energy patterns at work, and then which ones will help you on your next step.
Thank you. I would take a question from a participant. Sarah, actually, is my assistant. What kind of change have you seen in people after you've identified their personality assessment and worked with their body to change or improve? I don't know. I would leave it open to who want to answer that.
I will be happy to answer. Go ahead, Dylan.
Okay, and then you. It's hard to know where to start. Honestly, that's the whole work, right? That gets to the whole thing of it. The whole point from an embodiment assessment synergy standpoint is the potency of being able to, as Ginny was saying, as to repattern what is wanting to be repatterned. What I have noticed is that if somebody has, just to sort of presence a generality, if somebody is having issues with the degree of their general self-regulation and state activation, meaning if they are dissociating a lot, or if they are flooding and overstimulated with too much distress a lot, that makes it hard to do anything else. Right. So if the basic state is they're not feeling their body and they're out of their body, it's hard to do embodied work on other things. If their body is so flooded with intensity, it's hard to do anything else. So very often, just like Lynn was saying, I give them a 3-minute exercise, you know, and I have them do that for a while. We find that they're, you know, giving them some basic self-regulation tools and helping their system to find, in whatever way is relevant for them, according to their assessment and the conversation, to train their system to be able to self-regulate more easily, then we have a basis from which to explore the other areas of their patterning. So that'd be one thing I'd say.
Anyone else?
What I've really noticed is that given a framework for these somatic patterns, people get a much better sense, an intuitive sense of when to use the right energy at the right time. So they understand their preferences, because they could take an instrument and see their type, you know, if you will, but it doesn't keep them in a box like that's all you are. It's more like that's a habit that's in you, sure. Just like you have a preference about what hand you use, and you can access any pattern. So one of the things we do with the patterns is give people an experience of each one so they know how to access it in themselves. And then increasingly they can use the right pattern at the right time. If I just judge from my own experience of how it's changed me, I can see looking back that I had kind of a bad attitude about my weakest pattern. I didn't respect people in that pattern. I didn't respect it in me. And after seeing the framework and working with it, I came to have enormous respect for that pattern. That for me, it was the collaborator. It was one I really had to develop more of. I still have to be intentional about it. And what really shifted for me is I see what it's good at. And so it allows, even in my interactions with other people, a deeper respect for all those kinds of differences that we manifest as human beings.
Thank you. Lynn, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, I'll just try to give a very specific example of someone I worked with who I saw make a lot of progress. So I had somebody who had been in a job he hated for 20 years. So he had this job, he wanted to quit, he was really clear about that, but he was stuck. So we did an Enneagram typing interview, and he typed as a type 9, and anybody who knows the Enneagram, it's the peacemaker who doesn't like change, who really merges, and who kind of the mind starts to emphasize all the reasons not to do what you want to do, not to change. So we knew he was a nine. I had him start to do what's called the wake up series. So it's a 4 exercise Kundalini yoga Kriya. He was doing that every day. What it does is it builds your core, which is your power center. So he started to get kind of to step into his power. He was getting clearer and clearer. Okay, the next step to actually quit the job, like I've got to write this letter to my boss that I've been working with for 20 years. He was still stuck. He came to my yoga retreat in Greece. We were doing Kundalini yoga twice a day, 90 minutes, it was, you know, a full week. And when he went back 10 days later, he quit his job. So I want to be very clear. It was not the retreat that made him do that. It was his own work, but it is that he developed a strong enough nervous system. So the discomfort of going against what his pattern was, he could handle it. It still didn't feel comfortable, but he was able to do it. So that's a very specific example, but just to, I'm not sure if that's answering the person's question, but just to get very clear, that's what it can look like.
Thank you. Stefan?
Yes. I like this question. I will give you a few just direct examples. For example, someone who's an extroverted feeler, easily attuned to others, we notice that at a certain moment in their growth, they can have a grip experience. And we won't give this to all the personality styles, but for extroverted feelers, it could be beneficial, for example, to do a mind map or a logical thinking exercise on paper, the journaling. And for this specific type, what it does is that it triggers them into a cycle of insight, cycle of discovery, like using the inner thinking to align and integrate their external feeling. And if you take another type, for example, an extroverted intuitive, people connected to the realm of possibilities and tendencies, the moment where they're going to get insight and eurekas and have the ideas that they need to carry on their job or their career is the moment where they connect with their inner sensation. So we often recommend do some body scan or Vipassana retreats to extroverted intuitives. And on the other side, people who are inner intuitives, who have flashes of insight connected to the metaphors and dreams, we won't recommend them to connect to their body sensation first. Of course, it's beneficial for everyone, but first do some hatha yoga, some practices of movement that will actually help with consolidating all the flashes of insight that they have, embodying it in the movement. So different styles of personality, different exercises, everyone has the same kind of integration, but different insight.
Thank you. There's a question from someone, I don't know, well, okay, I will go with this one. Does anyone know of assessments that are somatic and developmental, like based on vertical development or agile development, rather than typology? Dylan?
Mine is. I didn't speak to that yet, but it's the way that it's structured maps to the constructivist school of ego development stages. So that's the tradition of Jane Levinger and Suzanne Kreuter, and then most recently Terry O'Fallon. We discovered that quite by accident about 8 years ago that the model that had unfolded was the same as Terry O'Fallon's model. And I was sort of floored, so I took it to her, and then I worked on it. We've just been working on it for years. So we teach it very much from a developmental standpoint. And that traces back to what I was saying of self-regulation first, as there's a developmental, you know, there's developmental dynamics at play very much in that.
Thank you.
It's easy to overstress the developmental lens once you get obsessed with it. So I find it's great to sort of go back and forth between a more pattern matching and balancing view and a developmental view, that they're very complementary to each other.
Thank you. Anyone? Stefan?
It's quite rare, the assessment that are somatic and developmental. The way we employ this in WeFlow is that per type, there's a proficiency for, you know, certain way of experiencing the world. And in the model that Jung has developed, there's 8 cognitive functions. And he says that maybe the fourth one is our connection to our unconscious. So there's a way we can actually develop all of our cognitive functions, even if some of them are in the subconscious or the unconscious, and some of them for some people are body sensation, body movement. So we have a kind of eight layers deep we can go to kind of unlock those capacities. But we don't really use it as an assessment tool. It's more to guide the person to the next step of their journey. It's not like an elevation. It's more how far do we want to go to claim all our capacities as humans.
Thank you. Jenny, you want to chat something?
The Phoebe is not designed as an assessment of one stage of development, but it's easily mapped into something like that, where you can see different patterns emerge in emphasis at different stages of development. For example, the sensitive self has much more of the collaborator visionary energy versus the rational self, which is more of the driver and organizer, as an example. But what we also like to do is look at how the patterns themselves mature as we mature. So a very immature driver looks like a bully, but a very mature driver is a great guardian, protects the work. So there's a maturing of the patterns as we grow up through the stages of development that can also be of guide to people.
Thank you. So we have a few questions around having a simple exercise to see how it works. I think it's going to be a bit hard to do it in such limited time. So let me know if you agree, but if you have anything in a few minutes.
I have one small idea.
Okay.
For Birgit. One very simple exercise is invite the children to slow down. To slow down their experience of themselves, their perception, to slow down maybe two times and then three times, five times, and then to invite them to discover what's there when they slow down and maybe speak it out loud, children by children.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Lynn.
Yeah. I'm doing a workshop on the 23rd that is, we will be doing the actual practice. So I'm not going to do it now because it would be difficult, but if anyone is interested in having an experiential go at this, I'm offering that on the 23rd. So.
Yes, I think you, yeah. So Lynn on the 23rd, Stefan is soon, pretty soon.
Tomorrow morning at 11 CET, yes.
Tomorrow morning. So Ginny, I think we have the recording of last year, so people can also see the...
Something even to experience right now, it just would take a minute, is if you just sense the big picture, 180 degree vision and a sense of extensor energy through the fingertips, that's more closer to visionary, right? And now as you start to bring that into form, you start to feel into the organizer. The form of the organizer. As it descends further, it moves into the rhythm of the collaborator, into the belly. And at the root chakra, it becomes the determination, the pressing of the driver. That concentration of energies from extensor to flexor side characterizes the four patterns.
Thank you. That's been really quick. Dylan, have you done a session or a session we can recommend to people?
Yeah, sure. Tomorrow, in fact, at my 11, I'm not sure. So that would be 11 plus 6 is 5 o'clock English time, London.
Oh, so 4 then. There should be 4, I guess. 4, 4 or 6.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Either way. Perfect.
Tomorrow, indeed. And then again on Friday, I believe it's the 23rd, I'm teaching about different types of embodied change processes.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Another question that I'm a little bit curious on that. Has anyone done their system overlaying human natal chart personality-centered Western astrology? So that might be a specific one. Just if you're... have done anything.
I've wanted to, but I haven't yet.
Okay.
Yeah, there's something that few people know, but it's actually quite an interesting thing to consider. Carl Jung, when he developed his personality of types or like psychological personality types. He actually studied astrology a lot. So a lot of his understanding, wisdom, insight that he put in his work is connected to astrology.
Thank you. My last question would be, and that's from my subjective perspective around personal assessment, that normally when you do a test, personality test, it's really easy to say to other people, oh, you're this type or you're this type, like a little bit pointing finger. Where do you see personality assessment and embodiment, so what you're using, as a way to connect to other instead of just pinpointing you're this one or you're this one? And I'm really a bit subjective there, as you can see. But if you want to start, Lynn, maybe?
Sure. One of the core concepts of the Enneagram is you don't type other people, they type themselves. So it would not be me pointing to you and saying what type you are. It would be you stepping into the type and recognizing yourself and telling me what type you are. And within that context, then the conversation is different. So it starts to become, how do we share your strengths and how do we minimize your weaknesses? So it's not that I'm, you know, pointing to you and telling you what you are and how you're flawed. It's instead you telling me who you are, what type you are, where your habit of attention goes. And then us recognizing, here's your strength. How do we share more of that? And then having these somatic tools to help you do that.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Sure, I'll go. There has been in assessment and personality research over the last 60 years, broadly, a large shift from types to more modes or states or tendencies. The way that the more modern systems are organizing themselves tends to be more around the insights that we learn from the neuroplasticity of our system. We didn't know how malleable and changeable our habits actually were 50, 70 years ago. We assumed, oh, you're this type or you're this type. Now we're realizing, oh, we can retrain. These are habits that accrued for certain reasons, and we can do a lot with those. So while I definitely still respect the type framework, when I read 15 years ago, Daniel Goleman writing about this, what he identified, the author of Emotional and Social Intelligence, that he sees us undergoing a shift from types to modes. I jumped on it and was like, right, right. And so I adopted this framework of modes that trigger states. So talking with people, in other words, in the framework of you are this type, or what type do you identify with, what types of modes and states is your body-mind awareness frequently generating? And how is that in your life is a more relaxing, fluid, less threatening, and less limiting framework, I find.
Thank you. Anyone else?
What I would add to this conversation is even the word assessment can sound a little finger waggy, you know, like it sounds judgmental. Assessment, right? It's an objective thing. What I think you're hearing from some of these answers, and what I certainly find in the energy patterns in the Phoebe, it's a subjective experience that connects us to what it is to be human. So we can feel all the modes in ourselves, you know? So it's not, I think it creates closer connection with human beings because we can feel into that in our own experience. It becomes easier to get on the same wavelength or into the same patterns with other people once we have a framework for understanding the possibilities. And rather than it being just an objective assessment, it becomes a subjective experience. And in that subjectivity, we can be one with.
Stefan?
Beautiful. I'll add to the subjective experience that a good way to connect to all types is to enter in an intersubjective experience. And it's a kind of terminology, but if you want to make it very practical, for example, I could ask all of you, all of the panelists or all of the people watching, is that okay if we take our time to be with our own feelings, sensation, thoughts, intuition? You can take your time. I can take my time. There's no rush. We can pause for 1 second before we answer a question. Is that okay with you? And I wait for the person to say yes. Like, can one panelist say yes or no to this? Would you agree to that? Like, can we be mindful together? And then the moment we all say yes, that, oh, there's a bit more space to be myself. They can be themselves. I can be myself. All of a sudden, a bit more connection in the space. So we have the intersubjective experience of being with each other using just language.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So we're getting to a close. So before we end up, and I remind everyone about this session, I would like to ask you, each of you, the top tip to be more embodied regarding what we've discussed so far. I would start maybe with Lynn. Do you have a top tip on how to be more embodied?
I would say the key is in your breath, and your breath goes with you. It's free. Think of it like a muscle. Learn to work with your breath. Learn to control your breath. Learn to build your breath. You will find your entire life changes with more breath control. So that would be my message.
Thank you very much. Dylan?
My top tip would be notice what feels comfortable and brings you energy versus what feels uncomfortable, if you really listen and feels like it's costing you energy. And that will tell you a lot about how your system is functioning. In which situation do I feel comfortable or uncomfortable? Because that's really the window into an embodied exploration of your patterning.
Thank you very much. Ginny?
Well, I will build on breath. Lengthen your exhale. Deepen that breath that you can penetrate that present moment right into your own body. And by working with mind and body as one, it becomes a gateway to resolving all dualism. It's a very serious and important quest.
Thank you very much. Stefan?
Well, since the breath has been covered, I will talk about playfulness and joy. Just in your own body, in your own experience, notice when you're by yourself or with others, what are the moments where you take yourself out of happiness, out of joy? Why would I take myself out of happiness, out of joy right now in my body? Why would I not experience it more right now? So just noticing those moments and just stopping them and experiencing more of it. We all do that. It's a bit weird, but we have a lot to gain to allow more of our joy and happiness that's already here.
Thank you very much. Well, thank you very much, everyone, Jeannie, Stefan, Lynn, and Dylan, for participating in this panel. That's been really, really interesting and rich to hear your different perspective. So for the participant, just to let you know, you can still watch this panel for 48 hours for the next 2 days. You can also watch a few sessions that are coming, Stefan, Lynn, and Dylan. Jeannie, I think we also are able to see your recording for a few hours. However, we have so many sessions that that's why we have our own library, the Embodiment Conference Library, that has a special price for now. So if you want to digest and keep learning, you can upgrade your account and get the Embodiment Conference Library. Thank you very much, everyone. It's been a pleasure, and I'm looking forward to hear about your session very soon and to see you soon.
Thank you so much, Stephanie.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. Thank you all.
Nice to talk with you all. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.